Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome to the show here. It is Saturday. We're looking back on the week here, and what a crazy week it has been. It is just absolutely amazing here. I'm turning around the dial here on the TV set here in our studio, and it is still all Michael Jackson all the time, everywhere, all over the place here. We're getting word now that the White House is asking for a national moment of mourning at 12 noon tomorrow. It's being asked for everybody in the United States to grab their crotch for 60 seconds. All right. They get worse from here. After all the plastic surgery Michael had, they're not sure whether they should hold a funeral or a Tupperware party. Now, moving right along here to the news here, the financial news is a little bit less than amusing. There were five bank closings yesterday. Basically, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation likes to do these closings in sort of end of day Friday, the idea that you're going to be a little bit less noticing of the fact that the banks are going through a transitionary phase. And in many cases, when these banks get closed, it may be a few days before depositors can get back there and conduct any kind of business and get their money out. It's for this reason that I keep telling everybody the best course of action in these difficult times: only keep as much money in the bank as it takes to clear the checks that you have written and keep everything else at home. You know, we do that here. We must have at least $1.85 in loose change sitting in the bottom of that there cookie jar. The banks that were closed yesterday were Murray Bank in Los Angeles, Metro Pacific Bank, Irvine, Horizon Bank, Pine City, Minnesota Neighborhood Community Bank, Noonan, Georgia Community Bank of West Georgia, Villa Rica, Georgia. So those five went down. And you're probably noticing the number of banks being closed is trending upward. It is accelerating. More and more banks are closing right now. It's getting worse every week. Now, I want to turn over here to the situation that has been in Iran. Before I get going any further, of course, our phone number is 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231. Matt is in the control room today. He's got his hands on the pulse of our mixer board. He's feeding the giant mutant hamster that runs in the little wire wheel to power all of this stuff, and he will be answering the phones when you call in and put you right on the air. Now, the situation in Iran, it's pretty much over. You know, it's pretty much over. And in a very weird way, it was the brouhaha from Michael Jackson's passing that just absolutely shut down the last propaganda venue that the pro-overthrow people had, which was Twitter. You know, the Iranian protesters, the overthrow people, the coup plotters had hijacked Twitter. They had created all these phony Twitter accounts. They had automation software that was simply repeating their propaganda claims over and over and over every so many minutes using all these different accounts, and they were just flooding Twitter so that Iran was at the top of the trending. And experts tracked all this stuff back to just a handful of full-time, we presume, professional propagandists who are out there trying to steer Twitter in the direction that the coup plotters wanted. And ironically, Michael Jackson's passing basically just blew Iran completely off all the trending topics, and they just simply vanished there. So in a very weird kind of twisted way, Michael Jackson has helped to, you know, possibly avoid World War III here. And I'm sure they'll grab onto that, and it'll be part of his tributes and stuff that we're seeing on TV, but there is some merit to that particular theory. But already, the media around the world is commenting on the import of this failed coup d'etat. And Haaretz is out there calling the BlackBerry president versus Twitter, as if it was Obama, basically implying that this was Obama was on the other side of this issue. Even though Obama's denying it and saying patently false, we had nothing to do with it, even as he writes a check for another $20 million to the Iranian protesters, the dissidents. So, basically, Haaretz took Barack Obama to task, you know, calling him the warrior of Chicago, and, you know, why is he accepting the continued rulership of Ali Khamenei in Iran? It's hard to digest. Why isn't he doing something? Blah, blah, blah. I don't think Haaretz realizes that they're actually calling Barack Obama a liar in public. because Obama said it's patently untrue, we're not doing anything, we know he's fibbing, but it's still rather impolite and rude for Haaretz, which is still viewed as somewhat the official voice of Israel, to be publicly calling Obama a liar like this, saying that, yes, this was Barack Obama trying to stage this overthrow, and why did he fail? And Israel's doing its normal whining about this situation, but what this article from Haaretz is telling me, and should be telling you, is that Israel has completely missed the real significance of the failure of the coup d'etat in Iran. Because as we've said over the last couple of days, the message here, and it's got nothing to do with Iran, I could care less about Iran. The message here is the Cold War tactics of deceiving the people of the United States and of the world to trick them into wars, it doesn't work anymore. It doesn't work anymore. This kind of covert, let's go in and knock over a government we don't like and put in a puppet ruler we do like, it belongs in the last century, where it more or less kind of sort of worked, and not always all that well. There was always a backlash, as we saw in 1979. So maybe, the smarter people in government are going to go up to those Cold War fossils and whack them upside of the head and say, look, we can't do foreign policy like this anymore because everybody sees it. Everybody knows it's there. Okay? We need a foreign policy. We need a way of dealing with other countries that is a little more above board and able to survive public scrutiny, because the other stuff just doesn't work anymore. I'm hoping America's leadership will learn that lesson right now. Obviously, from this article in Haaretz today, Israel has not. They're expressing publicly a mystification why none of this stuff worked. They'd better figure it out. Because if they didn't realize from the PR disaster that was cast lead that the old methods don't work anymore, and they haven't figured it out from Iran, then they're going to go on making really, really bad mistakes, which may be getting ready to happen now. They've got tanks massed along the border with Lebanon. They may be getting ready to make a second try for the Litani River. And even back in 2005, that last incursion into Lebanon was a public relations disaster for Israel. And I'm wondering, are they really so paralyzed mentally? Have they lost so many brain cells that they just don't get it? They don't see the mistake that they're making. What is the definition of insanity? Trying to do the same thing over and over and over again and expecting a different outcome. And I don't know, from Netanyahu's comments yesterday about Palestine, about how Palestine must be completely disarmed and Israel has the right to attack them at any time, and we're going to go on expanding the settlements. I mean, that's not a solution. That's basically what Israel is doing now. And so I guess the Israelis just don't get it. They're still stuck living in 1945. They can't make the paradigm shift, the leap, to live in the 21st century. They're hopelessly trapped in the past, and that means they're on their way to going extinct, unfortunately. Now, getting back to the situation in Iran and the U.S., obviously the U.S. is already starting to sulk and whine and cry that the coup d'etat didn't work out the way the planners at Langley said it was going to. Barack Obama has withdrawn his invitation for Iranian officials to partake of our 4th of July fireworks celebrations. By golly, that'll teach them not to allow us to overthrow their government. And meanwhile, the U.S. government is now denying visas to Iranian officials to attend the United Nations. And when you contrast this with the fact that Israel, which comes and goes as it pleases to the U.N. and to the United States, is in violation of their own membership agreement to the United Nations, vis-a-vis refusing to recognize the Palestinian right of return, which was written into the resolution that made Israel a member of the United Nations. So we've got Iran, which is a signer to the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, and they're just minding their own business. They haven't invaded anybody in 200 years, and they're trying to be a member of the UN, and the U.S. is saying, you're not allowed in here. We're not going to let you in here. But welcome to Israel, which is making war on everybody. They're in violation of their own UN membership. You know, the U.S. is looking really bad here. Talk about a PR disaster. We're going to take a break. 800-259-9231. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
This country is coming to. I sure would like to know if they don't do something by and by. The rich will live and the poor will die. Doggone. I mean, the panic is on.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to our show here. We're continuing our little Saturday look back at everything. And I got to tell you, the TV networks, it's a total waste out there. And it's, you know, they're just, now they're reporting on the time when Michael Jackson set his hair on fire doing that commercial for the soft drink company and everything. And I got a couple of emails over the break here. And, you know, I actually liked Michael Jackson's music, and I actually worked with him on a couple of his videos, okay? But, you know, the hype about the guy's passing, especially given the way that he passed and the questions around it, it's a distraction. There is so much going on in the world right now that we need to be looking at. And, yeah, I made a couple of jokes, okay, to sort of lighten the situation up. And, again, you know, I like his music and everything, but they are treating his death as if it is an historic, world-changing event. And it isn't. It is the tragic passing of an entertainer from what appears to have been a massive drug overdose. We didn't see this much of a brouhaha when David Carradine died in the middle of getting his jollies. We didn't even see this much of a brouhaha when John Belushi passed from what is functionally the same thing. Demerol mimics the effect of a speedball. It's both an opiate and acts also like cocaine. So you get the two different kinds of buzz going on here. So, yeah, it's tragic, and it's a tragedy for the family, and it's certainly driving up the price of all of his collectibles. They were talking about this auction where the prices of everything went through the... So everybody's out there pushing their agendas and making money and everything, but it is not something that directly affects all of our lives, like the failed coup d'etat in Iran, almost got us into a major war. Now, getting back to the Iran situation, and if you're a hardcore Michael Jackson fan, and if you're offended by some of the stuff I said, well, tough. Change channels. We've got stuff to talk about here. Anyway, getting on to back to the situation with Iran, we're now getting a report. This is kind of amazing. I couldn't believe this. Big headline out there. U.S. officials, Iran opposition leaders' website shut down, like they're not trying to do it to mine all the time. And here's the good one. Supporters tortured into confessions. Like this is a bad thing all of a sudden. Okay? And we're out here. Fox News is out there screaming how Mousavi supporters are being tortured to make them confess things. What has the U.S. been doing in Iraq and Guantanamo and Abu Ghraib and Bagram for the last couple of years? The entire case for the war in Iraq rested on a single confession extracted under torture. And that was a good thing. But all of a sudden, now that there's an accusation and admittedly no proof that they're doing it in Iran, now it's a bad thing. You'd think those bozos over at Fox News would understand. They've got to be consistent to be convincing. If Fox News is saying torture is great yesterday and all of a sudden torture is bad today, even Fox dulled down viewers are going to be saying, wait a minute, guys, what's going on here? And it's just amazing. They're just out there trying so hard to sell this. They can't make up their mind. Torture is good when we in the United States do it. Torture is bad when the Iranian government does it. Is the message we're getting. It's okay for us to torture people into confessing to politically convenient crimes. It's bad when the other side does it. Like, somehow we, the United States government, we're allowed to do these things, and you're not. That's the rules are. We're allowed to do things you're not allowed to do. That's the whole nature of government. Government is allowed to steal taxes. You're not. Government is allowed to kill. Capital punishment. You're not. Or on a larger scale, government's allowed to commit genocide, war, and theft and stealing other people's property, and you're not. So that's the nature of political power. The government reserves to itself the right to do things other people are not. Israel is allowed thinks it's allowed to have nuclear weapons without any controls, but everybody around it is not supposed to have them. So that's the hypocrisy on display here. And when I saw this headline, I almost fell out of the chair because now Fox News is saying torturing people is a really, really bad, evil thing when they're being tortured into confessions. And that's what's been going on in the United States, well, technically Guantanamo and Abu Ghraib and Bagram, for years. And Fox News didn't have a problem with it at all. It's just amazing. Now, getting back to the situation with NADA, they're finally starting to get the correct picture of the girl up there in their protest after that embarrassment of having used the wrong photo of the wrong still alive girl out there. And it's this situation about the so-called doctor. And yes, he finished medical school, but he wasn't practicing. He's a novelist. He lives in Great Britain. And apparently he's also a close friend with novelist Paul Cole. I'm not sure exactly, Coho. And apparently this novelist, this Paulo Coelho, my mistake. Apparently, this novelist is like heavy duty, tied in with Israel and politics. He's a member of the board of the Shimon Peres Institute for Peace. He's received the Crystal Award at the World Economic Forum and gave us, he's just a heavy hitter. This is looking more and more like this picking of NADA as a sacrificial lamb in a bloody shirt was an intelligence operation. Because everybody around her, even the videotape is showing, there was no active demonstration around her. There was no protest. There was no riot. Why would anybody pull the trigger on her except to have a convenient dead body to use as a propaganda device? Now, when you're talking about propaganda and it's green balloons and it's 30-year-old flags and everything, I guess that's, we kind of say that's just the way the game is played. But what we're looking at here now is a perfectly innocent young woman may have been murdered in cold blood to use as a propaganda device. And that takes this whole thing into a whole new level of scumminess and sliminess. And there's an object lesson there. You know, the other side likes to play dirty. And there is nothing they won't do to advance their cause. And the lesson here for the people of Iran, when you're watching really closely, when you have a group that is willing to do anything, including the murder of innocents, to attain power, then rest assured once they have that power, they'll do anything with it. And that's why we can never turn a blind eye to election fraud or cheating, and we just can't say, well, it's just the way the game is played here, you know. That's American politics, and yeah, it's down in the gutter, but hey, that's what Bill's character. No, it isn't. When you have people who are allowed to resort to criminality to win political office, you're going to have criminals in political office. It rests upon the people of Iran, and for that matter, the people of the United States of America, to maintain that the elections political process is honest and above board and clean and accurate. Because if you don't, you're going to wind up with the people willing to do anything, willing to steal elections to attain power. And if they're willing to do that to attain power, what, there are no restraints on them once they have that power. They'll do whatever they want to because, hey, we can get away with it. That was the prize for stealing the election. We've stolen a whole nation. And people who are willing to steal a nation, to impose themselves on the population, contrary to the principles of democracy, they're going to be willing to do pretty much anything else with that power, aren't they? Something to keep in mind as we get into this debate over our own elections, whether they're honest or not. The last 8 years, the destruction of our nation, all came about because the 2000 election was stolen. And I'm not saying Al Gore would have been any better than George Bush Jr. In fact, you know, we went through that just with Barack Obama. We thought he was going to be change and hope. He is every bit the disaster of all of our other recent presidents. We're in a terrible pickle here. But at least if we can get honest election systems back, and if necessary, that means taking a sledgehammer to those electronic vote stealing machines, maybe we could get somebody like Ron Paul in there. You know, I was talking with some friends last night, and they're not, nor they didn't used to be as plugged into politics as I am. And even they were saying, yeah, Ron Paul got screwed, and they really wanted him to get in as well. We're going to take a break here. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors, 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231, and we will be right back.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Some have maxed out all their credit cards. Some are working two jobs and living in cars. Minimum wage won't pay for a roof, won't pay for a drink. If you gotta have proof, distract yourself, Mr. CEO. See how far $5.15 an hour will go. Take a part-time job at one of your stores. I bet you
Aloha, America. Welcome back to our show here. We're finishing up with the story about Iran. And interestingly enough, just how pathetic the thing is getting here. Okay. The newly appointed head of the U.S. Southern Command, General Douglas Fraser, is now warning that Iran's insidious influence is now in Latin America. Iranians have infiltrated South America. They're down there. This may tie in with a story we ran yesterday about concerns for an impending coup in Honduras. Remember how it used to be the communists? The communists were everywhere. The communist fifth column. They were hiding under your mattress. They were in your bedroom closet. They were hiding out in the barn in the corn crib. All right, well, the communists are gone. The Soviet Union collapsed, and with it the Cold War, and the military-industrial complex has been going, what do we do now? We don't have any more money coming in. And so now they're trying to create a whole new enemy. Now it's the Iranians. The Iranians are infiltrating South America. I mean, that was the excuse for all the covert overthrows in South America throughout the 50s and 60s. You know, our bends in Guatemala, Allende in Chile, over and over again. We got to get the communists. That was exactly the reason that Henry Kissinger approved of and went along with the overthrow of Allende. He was democratically elected, but he was a commie. He has to go. That was the American justification for going in and overthrowing other countries and other governments because they were in league with the commies. And obviously, Fraser here is trying to set up the same thing, only now it's the Iranians and Hezbollah and Al-Qaeda that are down there. And we've got to be on guard, and we've got a right to go in and destroy other people's countries before they destroy us. It's psychotic. It didn't work through the 50s and 60s. Every country we went into and overthrew the government, there was an eventual backlash that just made the situation worse. To the point where our previous president is trying to explain to the American people why the rest of the world hates us. Well, because we're free. And the rest of the world, they hate us because of our freedoms, you know. We got all them freedom, you know. That's why they hate us. And so apparently his strategy was to take all those freedoms away so the rest of the world will just walk up and give us a big, wet smooch and say, we love you now. You're just as much of a slave as the rest of us. So, and it's nonsense. And they're getting ready. They're trying to sell you the same lemon they sold your parents. And as we saw last week in Iran, it isn't working. And that's the good news. I'm hoping they'll learn that lesson. I'm hoping they'll learn that lesson. And I'm sure there's probably a large number of people within the government saying, well, you know, we're doing this because there's nothing else we can do. We've got to overthrow these governments. We've got to steal their oil to pay our bills. You know, it's either that or let the U.S. government collapse. And frankly, given a choice between allowing the U.S. government to collapse from its own rot and its own corruption and its own fiscal recklessness against the possibility of triggering World War III, I think maybe letting the U.S. government follow the Soviet Union into history is probably the better of the two choices in terms of the number of lives that are likely to be lost. And we in America, like the Russian republics, will have a little bit of confusion, and then we'll pull together a whole new country with better fiscal sense. We'll kick out the oligarchs the way Russia did and say, okay, let's get back on track to being a modern 21st century nation where our interaction with other countries is commerce. We make products they buy. They make products we buy. We don't have to kill people. We don't have to overthrow their governments. We just sit around. We make a better world, and we engage in commerce. That is the path of peace, is trade and commerce and making things. That is the way to peace. Sitting around and saying the rest of the world is supposed to send us money without doing anything for it, that's empire. And I think future history is going to look back on the United States as very much like the great empire of Rome. And it will collapse for pretty much the same reasons. Imperial stupidity. All right, now, shifting over slightly to Iraq. You've probably been hearing over the last couple of days about, you know, how wonderful it is. We're finally pulling our troops out of the Iraqi cities. It's, we're winding the war down, and it's all going to be wonderful, and this we're keeping our promises to end the war in Iraq. No, that's not what's happening. The status of the forces agreement called for the troops to be withdrawn from the Iraqi cities at this point, It's not like the U.S. really has a choice unless they want to overtly go out and say, well, we're going to renege on another treaty agreement with the government we put into Iraq here. But if you think your loved ones are coming home, you'd better think again. Because according to Major General Robert Caslin, what is going to happen is, yes, they're going to be in technical compliance with the Status of Forces Agreement. They're going to take the troops out of the cities, but they're going to just cordon the cities off with the U.S. troops. The troops are going to be on the outskirts of the city, basically enforcing a blockade. So our troops are technically no longer in the Iraqi cities. They're encircling them. And the bottom line is, for the point of view of the families here in the United States, of all of our people in uniform in Iraq, they're not coming home anytime soon. If anything, their living conditions are going to be a little bit more difficult because they're out of the cities now and they're basically encamped, field camps, out, you know, garrisoning the roads and access ways in and out of the city. So they're functionally still in control of the cities without being inside the cities. It's a very fine point. It satisfies the Status of Forces Agreement under the letter of the law. But functionally, we're still in Iraq. We're still in the war there. Our kids are still getting killed. And nobody can figure out why this is going on. Now, this takes us to another story because over the British press is reporting this. The American press is totally gaga over Michael Jackson because they don't want to report that yet another confidential memo has come out, was obtained by The Observer, and it basically detailed a meeting in 2003, actually before the start of the war, a meeting between President Bush and Prime Minister Tony Blair, and basically confirmed their determination to go ahead with an invasion of Iraq in 2003, knowing that there was no evidence of weapons of mass destruction, and there was no approval from the United Nations. It was a five-page memo. It was dated January 31st, 2003, 2 months before the invasion, and basically saying that we understand the United Nations inspectors are not going to find weapons of mass destruction, but they were going to invade anywhere. They were lying to you. They knew they were lying to you. It was not a mistake. It was not bad intelligence. They wanted to invade Iraq. They wanted your kids to die on the desert sands of Iraq to conquer Iraq. And they lied to you to get it. And we've been telling you that for years and years here at WhatReallyHappened.com. If you go to our website, up at the top, there's a bar of permanent stories there. And the very first one there says, the lie of the century. And that is exactly what it was. It was the lie of the 21st century, the lie that sent us to war. And it was historic because for the first time in history, the lies used to start a war became known to the general public while that war was still being fought. All wars are started with lies. That's a historical reality. Hitler lied to the Germans to say, ooh, Poland is going to attack us unless we attack them first, and marched everyone into World War II. We now know because of documents declassified in 1994 that Franklin Roosevelt knew the Japanese were coming to attack Pearl Harbor. More than that, he goaded them into it. He followed an 8-step plan written by Office of Naval Intelligence Lieutenant Commander Arthur H. McCollum. An 8-step plan to provoke and goad Japan into the attack, so that he could lie to the people and say it was a surprise attack, those dastardly Japanese, and march us into the war. All wars are started with lie, but in the case of Iraq, we, the American people, we, the people of the world, knew it was a lie while the war is still going on. Why are you not screaming for the heads of the people who lied us into this war? We're going to take a break. We'll be back. We've got callers on the line right after this break.
This is the GCN Radio Network.
When all is twisted steel, what's swept away? Did these remaining holes reveal what really happened?
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. I'm going around the various TV channels here trying to find anything that is not Michael Jackson. And I stumbled across a show that's ridiculing the 9/11 truth movement. So it is a vast cultural wasteland out there right now. We're going to go to the phones. We've got Ruth in Illinois. Aloha, Ruth. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
It's a comment about Iran, Mike. The thing that's being de-emphasized that you're not seeing is that last month the largest purchaser of Iranian oil was China, May 2009. Also, they're not emphasizing the fact that Iran has rates first or second as far as oil and gas deposits in the world.
Oh, there's a huge amount of oil there. And as you know, Iran started their own oil bourse, and they were trading their oil in currencies other than the dollar, which was what Iraq was getting ready to do when the U.S. went in and stomped all over them.
Yeah, that's true. Very true. But they're not emphasizing that. They're pushing religious differences or whatever they can. It's just people need to look at, you know, what's in the other hand.
Oh, well, definitely, you know, all wars are ultimately economic. But pushing this idea of religious differences, that's very weak as a PR level because, I mean, the founding principle of the United States of America is that our government does not favor any one religion over any other. They're not supposed to. And so the very idea of religious war is anathema to the United States of America and our founding principles. And you know, it's kind of amazing to see all these fanatics running around our country screaming about how this is a Christian nation and this is supposed to be a Christian nation and we're supposed to have the Ten Commandments on the walls of all the government buildings. excuse me. On the walls of our various government buildings, and yet these are the same people who are ready to just absolutely condemn Iran for being a religious government over there. And again, it gets back to this hypocrisy that it's okay for us to have a religiously oriented government, but not okay for them. It's okay for us to torture people in confessions, but it's not okay to them. And the sheer hypocrisy and contrast of this is calling attention to itself, and people are picking up on it now.
That's good. I enjoy your show, Michael. I really do. I enjoy your synthesis and your taking apart the national issues, and you do it so well.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
I'd like to congratulate you on it.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm sending you a telepathic hug. All right. Have a good one, Ruth. Thanks a lot. All right. Now, getting back to the situation here, as you are probably aware, late last night, end of day Friday, when they were hoping everybody was going to be distracted by the Michael Jackson love fest on the corporate media, the House of Representatives passed the 1,200-page climate bill that Congress really didn't get a chance to read. And interestingly enough, Minority Leader John Boehner attempted a brief filibuster in order to give time for the members of the House to read a last-second 300-page addendum that was added to the bill at 3 o'clock in the morning. Okay, I mean, that's how they fought this thing down to the wire. And it was just amazing. The Democrats are screaming, how dare you slow down this process? Like, how dare you actually want to read the bill before you obey your orders to sign it or to vote for it? And you know, this should be alarming to every American because we went through this twice before. I mean, more than that, but two examples leap out at us. The USA Patriot Act was voted through the Congress without giving anybody time to read it. It was already written up when 9/11 happened. And as soon as 9/11 happened, it went to the floor and was voted through by a Congress that had been rattled by these anthrax letters, which we now know did not come from any Muslim countries. The anthrax came from the government's own biological weapons laboratories. And last September, the TARP bill was rammed through the House of Representatives, arm twisted by Nancy Pelosi, without being properly read. And look at all the stuff that was in both of those bills that in hindsight, a lot of people are saying, boy, if I'd known that was there, I wouldn't have voted for that. So we saw the same thing again last night. And the House Minority Leader is being excoriated for attempting to give the House time to read this last second 300 pages. I mean, that's amazing. Can you imagine being a legislator? Can you imagine being voted into the House? Elected to the House, and they come in with a 1,200-page bill, and just before you're supposed to vote on it, they put another 300 pages in there. huge chunk. And they said, don't bother reading it. Just vote it through. You've agreed with the rest of it. Just vote this part through. I mean, this is nonsense. You have no way of knowing what's in there. There is no law that says that anything added to a bill has to have anything to do with that bill. Remember the Homeland Security Act that created the Homeland Security Agency and all that? There was a last-second rider attached to that that indemnified vaccine manufacturers from lawsuits arising from the use of thimerosal, the mercury-based preservative that is anecdotally linked to the epidemic of autism that American children are suffering right now. Had nothing to do with Homeland Security. And yet it was thrown into that bill at the last second and voted through in the rush to have a Homeland Security agency. And the vaccine makers just kicked back and said, wow, we got it. We got it through Congress. And it was signed into law because there is no line item veto. And you can't sue the vaccine makers. And so all the research into the link between thimerosal and autism was dropped because there's no more point in finding the link because you can't sue the vaccine makers anyway. So this was just a horrendous abuse of their authority and power. And Representative Joe Pitts of Pennsylvania said it doesn't matter how you doctor it or tailor it, it is a tax. It is a huge tax increase on all of us. It is a covert tax in that we don't get the bill directly. But the cost of this tax will be added to the goods and services and products that we buy. And most Americans don't understand it. When you go into the supermarket or the hardware store or the shopping mall, one-third of the price of everything you buy goes to cover taxes imposed on the importers, on the manufacturers, on the transportation, on so the property taxes, the income taxes, the employee taxes of all the companies along that chain. One-third of that price of the product on the shelf is taxes, hidden taxes, covert taxes, and then you pay sales tax on top of that. One of the reasons we have such a high cost of living in this country is taxes, hidden taxes, taxes on taxes. One time in response to the music piracy issue on the debate, now because in my day job I work in the entertainment industry and my wife and I are both content creators, our sympathies are obviously with the holders of the copyrights. And we were debating this issue with people saying, oh, those record companies, they make so much money, you know, we got to stick it to them because they're sticking it to us. And I did an actual cost breakdown because I have produced and put in the stores a music CD myself. So I know about the process, whereas the people who are out there copying files generally do not. Okay? I went and I did an analysis, and I went through the entire cost that it takes to produce, package, market, sell, order fulfill a music CD. And I found out all along the way, I took the taxes, everybody who plays a role in putting out a music CD, and I calculated all their taxes, and I found out the United States government, the state government, government at all levels, actually make more money off of a music CD than anybody else in the process. They make more than the recording artist. They make more than the studio owner. They make more than the producer. They make more than the packager. They make more than the shipping company. They make more than the retail outlet. Government gets the lion's share of the money from a music CD. And we who actually make the product, we're kind of on the hind end on this deal. Everybody along, we're all making less. If you take the money that is made from your labor, your wages and your salaries, and you take all of that withholding, and then you add on top of it the 23-24% uplift that your employer must pay for the privilege of hiring you, and you will find out that government makes more money off of your work than you do. That's kind of where we are right now. And now they're adding yet another tax on top of all of us, $700 per year per American. Now, if you're Nancy Pelosi and worth $500 million, another $700 a year is no big deal. But if you're struggling just to stay in your home right now, another $700 could be the death sentence. We're going to take a break for news and commercials, and we'll be back talking about the climate bill after we take this break. Aloha, America.
And again, thanks to Glenn at CascadiaPublicRadio.org, who not only serves up Media Monarchy, and the Corbett Report, and Ground Zero Lounge, and Alan Watt, Wayne Madsen, Webster Tarpley, on and on and on and on. Actually, if you just subscribe to Glenn's feed on RadioForAll.net, that'll pretty much cover you for all your alternative radio news needs.
Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to our show here for hour number two of our Saturday look back at the events of the week here. And again, if you'd like to join us on the air, the number is 800-259-9231. That's 800-259-9231. Matt is in the control room ready to answer your calls and put you on the air here. We're talking about the climate change bill that has just been arm-twisted through the House of Representatives. Nancy Pelosi at her best again. And you need to understand, first of all, if you're a longtime listener to the show, if you're a longtime reader of whatreallyhappened.com, you probably are aware by now that there is a considerable body of evidence that man-made global warming is not a crisis. We have a classic case of politicians doing what they do, which is to take something that happens all by itself, in this case climate change, and turning it into a crisis for which you must pay to have it fixed. And the reality is the Earth's climate is always changing. We just came out of a major ice age a few thousand years ago. We just came out of a little ice age a couple of hundred years ago. Gee, I wonder why the planet's getting warmer. Except that right now it isn't. We're in the seventh year of a continuous cooling trend. That's what's going on here. Now, the climate change cultists have been demonizing carbon dioxide because that can be blamed on human activity. The burning of fossil fuels, your exhalations, human activity generates carbon dioxide. They're not demonizing methane, which is a far more potent greenhouse gas, because that comes from our biological processes. It mostly comes from deep sea microbes and life forms like termites, and you can't tax them. You know, they've tried. It's impossible to get a termite to fill out a 1040 form. Actually, they'll eat it. So here's the deal. Carbon dioxide can be blamed on humans. Water vapor is a far more potent greenhouse gas. And they're not going to tax and make a big deal about that. It's carbon dioxide is the villain. Carbon dioxide is the villain because carbon dioxide can be blamed on people. And that's really what it's all about. And they're trying to demonize carbon dioxide. Folks, carbon dioxide is good for plants. The more carbon dioxide is, the more plants will grow. And we're on a planet dealing with major amounts of famine around the planet. Carbon dioxide helps deal with that because it's already been shown the more carbon dioxide there is in the atmosphere, the taller plants grow, the more food they produce. And it's just insane. They're taking it as a normal part of life, and they're demonizing it, and they're going to charge you money for it. Now, what needs to be understood here, and we just put this up at whatreallyhappened.com, the reality is that Barack Obama is arm-twisting this through the House, and he's getting a lot of help because our politicians are financially linked to this whole operation. Years ago, when Barack Obama was on this foundation, he helped fund the startup of this cap and trade credit brokerage, which Al Gore is heavily financially invested in. The cap and trade program is going to be buying the carbon credits from Al Gore's own company. They're already doing this in Europe, and it's made Al Gore and his investors fabulously, fabulously rich. And they're being very cagey about who is invested in this whole operation. Do you know who set this whole thing up for Al Gore? Barack Obama helped to fund it. But you know who set it up? Ken Lay. Does that name ring a bell? It ought to. Ken Lay was the brains behind the scam known as Enron. And if you want to know what Enron is doing to the economy, look at California today. California hovers at the edge of collapse today because Enron gamed them to the tune of $9 billion. And when Gray Davis tried to do something about it, Ken Lay came in and helped organize and fund the recall to dump the blame for this on Gray Davis and put in Arnold Schwarzenegger as California's savior. Are you feeling very saved out there in California? I don't think so, because the first thing that Arnold Schwarzenegger did when he won the governorship is he wrote off the money that Enron owed California, let him off the hook completely. Between that and the cost of the illegal immigration, that is why California is dying, despite having the most manufacturing of any state in the union, having the high-tech sector in Silicon Valley, having all of the entertainment industry and all the money it generates. California is still in trouble. Talk about really bad management. And I'm sorry, Schwarzenegger, he's a great guy, and he's a lot of fun. He's very intelligent, very smart. He is not an administrator. He is a politician. And we've all been politic to death. But you need to go out, look at those top articles at whatreallyhappened.com, because Obama is personally invested in this cap and trade system. It is not about the environment. It is about making money. The United Nation of Scam. We have a government of the hucksters, by the hucksters, and for the hucksters. And that's just the way it is. All right, the phone lines are loading up, and we're going to go first with... Well, they're both long-distance calls. I'm going to have to take them in order. Thomas in Sweden, aloha. Thomas, welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Yeah, otherwise you can take the other call, because I'm actually in on an 800. I can wait.
Oh, okay. Then, Thomas, thank you very much. We're going to switch over to Solomon from Brazil, because he's always paying very heavily for his long-distance call. Solomon, aloha. Welcome to the show.
Saravá, meu irmão Ribeiro. Como vai você?
Muy bien, gracias.
Oh, thank you. greetings to your distinguished audience, and thank you very much to this gentleman in Sweden to yield me the opportunity to talk to you and to your distinguished audience. And thank you for accepting the call. You know, I promise I will be nice, polite, and I know that is your show. Do you remember last week I told you that I was angry? Well, I'm still angry.
Good.
And I even got my first nomination for the Angry Academy Award just trailing you.
Well, I'm going to vote for you.
Yeah, but you are number one.
Oh, you nominated me. I'm sorry. I thought you were nominated.
No, you're number one. I'm trailing you. I'm behind you.
I see.
So nomination is first Mike Rivero, second Solomon.
Well, I would like to thank the members of the Academy for this great honor to... Well, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Of course it is. Last week I asked you about anger management, and you mentioned that you have your opinion, and you make... And I ask you again, and then you got kind of a piece off, and I say, well,
No, Solomon, let me explain. The joke is, I would put a word there saying blank anger management. We have it on a T-shirt that we sell at the store, but I can't say that word on the radio, so
okay,
I have to use the buzz. Anger management.
Okay, but here's the catch. I was doing something on purpose, because what I was doing, I was playing deaf.
I see.
Yes, I was playing deaf like our society who doesn't want to hear truth.
I doth misconstrue.
No, but it was. I was expecting that you said, well, are you deaf? And I would say, yeah, I'm playing deaf. The thing is that we really, Brother Rivero, we really pay a lot of attention to distractions daily available. And they are like valid excuses to ignore our complicity in each and every one of the events that happen. Again, language play a major role, and I want to praise you because the day before yesterday, you make a very intelligent correction when your callers mentioned the word afraid, and you say, no, you must be angry. And really, the only way to push for justice is if we are angry. To me, it seems like we are living in the land of the slave and the house of the coward. Because Brother Rivero, when we describe, or when you describe it, all the military covert and not covert intervention, you listed dozens of very weak and vulnerable countries. Huh? Or predator militaries only bully Afghanistan, Vietnam, Dominican Republic, Grenada, Panama, but the last time they alone by themselves fought against a major country, a powerful country, it was probably against the British.
Yes.
See? What tells you that? That tells you that there is this kind of a cowardly mentality that you you can see, and most of the people could have seen reflected the day that they saw this Nazi officer battering, attacking, punching that poor female bartender because she refused to get him more alcohol. And the conflict of interest was the judge decided...
Yes, Solomon, I'm sorry to cut you off. We got to take a break for some commercials. Hang on, we'll be right back. This is the What Really Happened radio show. I'm your host, Mike Rivero. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN, great talk radio starts here. Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program. Call Mike now at 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231.
And aloha, America. We're going to go right back to the phone. Solomon, please pick up where you left off.
Thank you very much. I was gathering my thoughts during the break. You know what? The worst part of that incident is that no one of the clients over there just jumped to the scene. And, I don't know, by any means, stop this guy, pop it, I don't know, whatever. So what I really want that people still be focused, that we can see that the ones ready to attack us are not the foreigners, but the ones protected by impunity. We should really think where is the largest building in Washington? Which one is the largest building in Washington? And that is the one who rules us. You mentioned the other day as an example another PSYOP operation from the Iranians. I want to bring to your consideration the one that they were making in Venezuela during the 2002 coup d'etat, when RCTV make a video showing people from Chavez supporters shooting to whatever, and they allegedly accuse them shooting to opposition people. That was another psyop. There are many things that are distracting us from what really happened. That's the reason of your program, what really happened. What really happened also will be a great contribution to your audience if you will talk about our own loose nukes. We have a long list of loose nukes that no one want to talk. And so one of these days when we will see a mushroom cloud, instead of jumping to conclusion, we should really think about it. It won't be one of our loose nukes.
Yes.
We have at least 50. 50. The other day you make a wonderful comment about Rachel Corrie. On top of that, I know that you know that a play, just a theater play that was ready to be opening in New York about 2 years ago was banned because they didn't want that kind of thing come to the knowledge of the public.
Yes,
so
I remember that.
When we see those kind of things, we need really to focus and don't be distracted and realize that who are the ones who are going to attack us? Only the ones who have impunity to do so. And we live with those ones every day of our life. They are living in our own country. There are people who have come back from military actions that have changed the uniform and put probably even a suit. But they are the ones who are ruling the show.
Very much so. Very much so. War is a racket.
Yes, war is a racket. War is a racket, and it was said by Smedley Butler, and it was presented as a confrontation by Erin Wakada. It was also denounced by General Antonio Tacuba. Those people are the people who really should pay attention and come to realization that we cannot keep worshiping people in uniform. That those are the ones at this particular moment are the ones who are really attacking us in one or another front. It doesn't matter, but they are responsible. We need to really be very vocal about that.
And yes, we do.
I'm very thankful for the time that you dedicated to that. And it will be a great idea if one of these days you debrief of how many nukes we have lost, quotation, for some particular reason. How many nukes have been flying over the United States? All of a sudden, they just disappear. 6 here, 2 there. Who have those nukes? What they are planning to do with those nukes?
Well, we
Another,
know... We know that that Israel built its first nuclear weapons with fissionable materials from the Savannah, Georgia plant. And I remember when that was a big scandal where the accountant said, we're missing all this nuclear material. And then 2 days later, they're saying, oh, it's probably just plated on the inside of the piping. It's no big deal. It's a non-story. Go away. And then subsequently, we find out that Israel is building nuclear weapons. And at least initially, before they were able to do their own plutonium processing, they were building it using materials that they'd gotten from here in the United States. We know that nuclear weapons have gone missing, not only here in the U.S., but in the Russian republics. They're all over the place. Nobody knows who actually has them. It could very well be that North Korea hasn't really built their own nuclear weapons. They've just bought a bunch of them from the former Soviet Union or even from Israel. We don't know. That's a very black market area. With this idea of nuclear weapons. And we know that we had that situation where six live weapons were on the wings of an airplane flying over the United States. The theory right now is they were going to drop one and blame it on Iran, but fortunately it got called off. But apparently one of those weapons is still out there. Anyway, Solomon, we need to wrap up. We've got other callers.
Thank you very much for all your consideration, your time, and thank you for the other caller that yelled his time and his place to let me talk to you. Thank you very much, brother.
All right, I will do that. Solomon, thank you very much. Jim in Scotland, I'm sorry you dropped. We've only got one call ahead of you. If you call back in, we'll get you right on the air. Thomas in Sweden, aloha, Thomas. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind today?
Good morning, Mr. Rivero, and aloha. You had an article up on the front page on my morning about a pastor in Louisville, Kentucky, who invited his parishioners to bring their firearms to church.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a New York Times article, and they were a bit negative toward it. Can I tell you something about churches in Sweden?
Sure.
Well, the vestibule of a church in Swedish is called Vapenhus. This means, this is a bad translation, but it means weapons house. This is where you stored weapons in the church.
Mm-hmm.
And if, let's say, the village was going to be attacked, the custodian or whatever they call them rang the church bells in a special way. And people who were, let's say, in the fields or who weren't close enough to their homes or who were in the village proper, they ran to the church and used those weapons to defend the village. So having weapons in a church, this is nothing new.
No, I mean, during colonial times in the United States of America was the same situation. When the British were trying to seize weapons, which led to the battles of Lexington and Concord, the weapons were being stored, for the most part, either in churches or in grange halls. Now, when I was a kid, I'm giving my age away here, but when I was a kid growing up in New England farming country, it was no big deal to take a gun with you either to school or to church because you might be going hunting immediately afterwards to put food on the table, or you might be going to varmint the gardens because, you know, obviously, you know, you want to keep the pests out of the garden so that they don't eat your crops. And so having a firearm with you was no big deal. It was just part of everyday life. And we didn't have to worry about lunatics with guns doing mass shootings because anybody who acted improperly got shot down in a very, very, very quick hurry. But this idea that somehow we're all going to be safer, helplessly disarmed while the government is building more and more weapons to inflict pain on us, pain ray guns and tasers and the rest of it, I mean, come on, folks, the writing is on the wall. They're turning us into a giant human farm where we exist only to be harvested for labor or soldiers or who knows what all else. And that's the reason for the disarmament agenda.
Is it the first thing that Stalin and then Hitler and then Mao did when they took over control of their countries? That was to take the weapons away from the people.
That's absolutely correct. Every genocide in the 20th century and 21st century was preceded by a gun ban on the targeted population. Thomas, we're going to let you go here. We got to take a break. Jim in Scotland, the phone lines are open. If you want to call back in, we'll put you in right there ahead of everybody else. This is the What Really Happened radio show. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network. You're listening to the Genesis Communications Network. And now, set your eyes on the future, and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. The phone lines are filling up here again. Before I get to the calls, though, just a couple more comments about the climate bill. The bottom line is you need to go back and understand that this is all about making money. Our government doesn't know how, they don't know how to make anything. They're lawyers and accountants. They can't make anything to make money. All they can think of is a scam. We are the nation of the scammers. They're taking what Enron did to California with electricity, and they're doing it to the whole country using carbon dioxide now. And you know what's going to happen? I'll tell you exactly what is going to go on here. If the Senate passes this thing, and Barack Obama signs it, and he will because he's financially tied in with these people, they're all going to be looking at their own stock portfolios and saying, yes, we can make money buying and selling carbon credits now. And we're all going to get rich, and it's going to be wonderful. And what's going to happen is that every American company impacted by this bill is going to shut down their operations inside the United States where they have to pay a carbon tax, and they'll simply move someplace else where the rules are different. And that means all of the American oil companies, all the oil companies operating in the United States are going to shut down their domestic refineries, which put out huge amounts of carbon dioxide. And then we're going to wind up buying our refined oil products, gasoline, kerosene, diesel fuel, aviation gas, all of it. We're going to be buying it already refined and made from other countries, which is exacerbating the problem. Plus, all those refinery workers will be out of a job. All those local people who are working in the local industries, any job with a carbon footprint, they're going to shut the business down. They're not going to try and spend the money to satisfy the ever-tightening carbon restrictions. They're simply going to go someplace where, hey, no big deal. We can just go here and do business the way we've been doing it all this time. This is a body check on the U.S. economy at a time when we are in a depression and we cannot afford it. We're going to go to the phones. Mike in Georgia. Aloha, Mike. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Adioseo. I have a couple of questions. One of them is I thought there was a law in place already that required representatives to read legislation, and that if they didn't, that the legislation was invalid.
I know one was proposed. I don't think it ever got all the way through and was signed. If somebody knows different, I'll have to look into that. But my recollection in my failing memory here is it was proposed, but it was never actually passed.
Well, just like inadequate representation, we'll get to another case in court. If they don't read that legislation, is that still inadequate representation because they haven't prepared to perform the service for us?
I would agree with you that it is, but right now finding a court that would agree with that, and even more, an executive that would enforce it, that's going to be the real trick. I mean, right now Barack Obama has shown a clear propensity for ignoring the Constitution and just doing as he gosh darn well pleases. And so, any law that comes along that does not suit his own personal interest is simply going to be ignored or vetoed or pocket vetoed.
Well, that makes the federal government a criminal organization rather than a governing body. And doesn't
that? Well, we've known that for a long time.
Okay, well, that makes the responsibility of every regional government, local government, and state government, just like corporations down in South America weren't allowed to do business with terrorist or criminal organizations, or they could be arrested. You know, by the same idea, our local governments and state governments, the state be asserting states' rights, and the local government should be asserting their rights in their jurisdiction.
Well, we're seeing that more and more with the states that are passing the 10th Amendment resolutions. We're seeing where Arizona has, their legislature has already passed a law saying that that all of these climate change laws are null and void within their own state borders. So we're setting up a test case for states' rights versus the federal government. The problem is right now the government gets to choose who the good guys are and the bad guys are. And a lot of times, terrorist nation, that it's really a marketing ploy to get you to go do business with the people they want you to do business with. I have come to realize lately that all this brouhaha about so-called conflict diamonds has nothing to do with war and death and whatever. Simply, conflict diamond means anybody who is not owned by De Beers. So it's a marketing trick. The De Beers Mining Corporation, they control diamonds, they control the prices. If you really think about how many diamonds there are, it doesn't make sense that they should be as expensive as they are. And so what by calling their competition conflict diamonds, they discourage people from going out and buying from cheaper sources. And that's really all it is. It's a marketing ploy. The same thing with so-called terrorist nations. But the government reserves to itself the right to say who's a good guy and who's a bad guy. So, you know, as long as they're always saying their friends are the good guy, we're kind of stuck with that. I think Mike just dropped, if I'm correct. So we're going to switch over here to Tom in Florida. Aloha, Tom. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Man. My point is that the Federal Reserve is nothing more than a part of the international banking cartel, correct?
Correct. That's they're owned by foreign banking interests primarily. I think there's only two of the owners are American. The rest are all mostly European.
Yeah, and this all started hundreds of years ago with the money changers and fractional lending. Now,
yes, that's correct.
That is how they put nations in debt.
That's right.
Okay. Now, my question is, since Abe Lincoln and Andrew Jackson printed their own greenbacks and turned the printing of money over to the power of the Treasury Department where it belongs, national debt was removed within a year under both those presidents.
That's
and
true.
And taxes went down. And
mm-hmm.
the economy was very strong. It worked
mm-hmm.
in the past.
Yes, it did.
The only problem is that we don't have a government that's run by the people. It's run by the international banking cartel. So how are we ever going to be able to get people in our government who are going to have the guts to stand up to the international banking cartel? I don't see it happening unless we have a total revolution in this country.
I'm sadly, I agree with you. And the reality is that every time a government has tried to have their own currency free from the central banks, those banks will organize against them. Hitler did it in 1933. He turned Germany's economy around. He was Time Magazine's Man of the Year for the economic miracle he pulled off in Germany. And so all of a sudden you hear all the international banks declaring a boycott on Germany. Judea declares war on Germany. Yeah, and basically
they caused depressions.
They tried to basically crush Germany, and that set the stage for the war. In the case of Abraham Lincoln, as soon as he was assassinated, his greenbacks were pulled out of circulation and destroyed. John F. Kennedy, 5 months after signing Executive Order 11110, authorizing the issuance of U.S. notes, he's
right.
assassinated, and the U.S. notes are taken out of the market.
Right.
During
right.
the American Civil War, hang on, let me finish this thought. During the American Civil War, the European banks were so terrified of Abraham Lincoln's greenbacks, they supported the Confederacy against the Union. These are our so-called friends. And, of course, we know our present-day curse, the Federal Reserve, was voted through Congress on a Christmas break, 1913. They waived the quorum rule. It could be argued that the Federal Reserve Act was illegal on the face of it because the quorum rule is not supposed to be waived. There's supposed to be a minimum number of politicians in Congress to enact any legislation. And they walked in and said, well, for this one time only, we don't need a minimum number of congressmen. We're enough to do it. They voice voted the Federal Reserve Act through, walked it across to the Senate floor, did exactly the same thing, took it to Woodrow Wilson, who had already promised he would sign it in exchange for the money to run and become president. So it was a scam all the way through. And it's interesting. I was having dinner with some friends last night, and I explained to them the problem with the Federal Reserve is once it goes into operation and that first Federal Reserve note goes out, more money is owed to the Federal Reserve than is actually in existence. And that's why we have depression after depression after depression.
Well, that's because they're allowed to lend out 10 times the amount of the assets they have.
It's a counterfeiting operation. It's a legal counterfeiting operation.
Right, right. I understand that Illinois at one time voted to use their own banknotes as a sovereign state.
Yeah.
And they repaired a lot of their infrastructure doing that. And they didn't have to raise taxes.
Okay, we got a hold right here. We're going to take a break. Tom, just stand by. George and Steve will get to you in the last segment of the show. We'll be right back.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Visit us online at whatreallyhappened.com. And now, set your eyes on the future, and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to our show here. The phone lines are loaded up here. We're going to finish up with Tom. Tom, before I let you talk again, if you have never seen the video Money as Debt, you need to go hunt it down. It's out there on YouTube in pieces. It's out there in a couple of other places all in one chunk. It really does explain the true nature of the economy of the United States and how we got to this mess. And as far as dissolving the Federal Reserve, when you hear the phrase clash of civilizations, what they're really talking about, it's a code for a clash of banking systems. This compound interest fractional reserve banking system is predatory. By its very nature, it creates predatory societies who have to constantly expand the base of borrowers in order to create the new money to pay the debt on the old money. That's why they're always talking about the growth of the economy. If the economy doesn't grow, you're going to go into recession and depression, which is what's happened here. We ran out of people to borrow more money. And it's a very predatory method, but it makes the people at the top incredibly, incredibly wealthy. But you have other banking systems. You have the currencies issued by the governments, which work very well for the people of those lands. The predatory banking can't stand that to be around because people can see what a tremendous difference it makes. The same with Islamic banking, which does not have compound interest. It is a loan plus a fixed flat fee that avoids these kind of recession depression problems. And the Western banking is aware that as global communications for the ordinary people continue to increase, people are recognizing that the American system of banking, the British system of banking, is designed to make the bankers very rich. It's not designed to make the society work better. And so we're coming up on a point where I think there's going to be a push all around the world, all at the same time, a global revolution to get rid of this kind of banking and go back to governments issuing their own currencies for the benefit of their own people. It's probably going to wind up being violent. I mean, the history of the fractional reserve banking system is the history of unending war and assassination to preserve their wealth and power.
I have two suggestions for all your listeners, and then I'll get off.
Okay.
One is to go to www.freedocumentaries.org and look at the documentary called Money Masters. Okay, it'll give you a real great lesson in all this stuff going back through history. The other suggestion I have is what I'm doing on a grassroots level is I'm joining the 9/11 Truth Organization and going to go out there and get involved with this stuff. And at the same time we're talking about finding out the truth about 9/11, I'm also going to try and educate the people on the international banking cartel and the Federal Reserve and what a scam it is.
Yes, absolutely.
And everybody can do that.
And interesting story that we ran just yesterday. Documents have surfaced proving that the Rothschilds, who own so much of the world's international banking, turns out they made their original fortune in the slave trade. They've been trying to say, no, we're just very good businessmen. They made a fortune in the slave trade. That reveals their mentality. They believe in enslavement, and they're using their banks to enslave the rest of us. We're going to switch over here to Steve in Canada. Aloha, Steve. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind? Is Steve there? Okay, I guess
there
Steve.
I am. Nope.
There you are. There you are.
Somebody didn't press a button on time. Anyway.
Okay. It's the hamster.
Yeah. Anyway, I think yesterday's vote, based on everything I've seen and heard, if that doesn't prove that you guys have a criminal rogue government in place right now, nothing does, because there is absolutely nothing about what was passed in that bill that is beneficial for any American in at least the next generation. It's going to take at least a generation for the Green Revolution to take hold. So you guys are going to have, I'm calling from Canada, so I say you guys, and it directly affects us because when you guys sneeze, we get a cold. So, I mean, it's going to be a disaster, an absolute disaster. There's no way that the Green Revolution can come on fast enough and strong enough and basically overcome the rampant taxation that is about to come in place there. I mean, people already can't afford to pay the taxes, and now they're going to tack on another $700 or more dollars per person.
Yeah, that's the $700 is an absolute minimum. And on top of that, Obama is now volunteering us to pay the new global tax from the United Nations.
So we're talking, what are we talking here, $1,200, $1,500 per person? Is this
you
really?
Know,
I, cannot believe that right now there aren't a million people standing in front of the White House ready to rip the doors and windows off of that place.
Well, I'm amazed, too. I mean, we had that crowd that was there in front of there waving the flag of the Shah a week ago. That one was kind of an eye-opener. They weren't banished to some free speech zone. But it's not just the $1,200 from the bill they passed last night and the UN tax. Every household in America has an additional $100,000 in tax debt that they're going to have to pay in the coming years from all these bailouts for the last 6 months.
Yep.
I mean, the government is just completely out of control. Their solution to everything is, well, we'll just take more money from the people.
I don't think it's your government. I don't. These people don't work for you, the people. They work for somebody else. So, therefore, it's not your government. You guys have been overthrown by somebody else because there's nobody in their right mind that was working for the people of the United States and cared about the people of the United States that would pass this bill, and yet 215 of them said yes to it. Now, there's a problem. There's a serious problem, and maybe the MIAC reports that went out a little while ago saying that certain people in the United States should be considered terrorists is correct, because you are going to have a lot of people mad when they realize what has just been handed down to them and their kids. And
yeah,
obviously the only way that this is going to be resolved is, either the voting fraud's got to be corrected or there's going to be violence, one or the other, and it's sad, man.
Well, unfortunately, the government is never going to allow the voting fraud to be fixed because they benefit from it. As far as why Congress votes the way it does, we found out from the House disclosure forms, they're simply voting tax money into the companies they own stock in. They're voting themselves rich. It is that blatant. Steve, we got to let you go. We've got one more caller I want to sneak in here before the end of the show. George in Texas. Aloha, George. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind today?
How you doing? I got to say one thing. The death of Michael Jackson and Farrah Fawcett, I don't think it gave me enough distraction they needed, because a lot of us folks, you know, Michael Jackson died, and life goes on, and we're still hammering them. And I think
we are here in the alternative media, but if you go onto the TV networks and everything, it's amazing. It's just all Michael Jackson all over the place, and they're just going to milk this for everything they can for the next week. And they're hoping to draw people in. And have them not pay attention to just the reaming they got with the climate change bill. Because, as I said before, they've been doing this in Europe already for over a year. It has not improved the environment. It's just made life more expensive, and it's made the inside players very, very rich.
Well, I kind of see, just like with gun control, like, I tell one thing about Texas. Texas will not roll over to gun control or anything.
Yes.
I mean, but as far as, like this cap and trade, we're going to hammer the Senate, and I know it's going to probably squeak by the Senate. You know, you look at the hate crime bill, that might squeak by the Senate, even though we've been hammering them, and they're still trying to pass it.
Well, we definitely need to get on to our senators' cases on this one. Imhoff is saying it might not pass, but I'm wondering if he's saying that to discourage people from calling. So I'm going to put that in a nice if it happens, but we can't rest on our laurels. We can't be distracted by Michael Jackson. We have to get on the phones to the Senate, and as of Monday, they're going to be in their home district offices. So you don't have to call to Washington, D.C. Just call to wherever your senators actually live and have their offices in your state, and just say, this cannot stand. Our economy is in a depression. Adding more taxes to us, you know, it's like going down to the bottom of the Titanic and chopping a bigger hole in the bottom to see if that'll fix things.
Well, one more thing. I'm even starting to make a little mini film, about 45 minutes long, about the 17th Amendment, why it must be repealed. Because I could tell after 1913, before 1913, the U.S. Senate shielded us from banker takeover. But after 1913 and the passage of or ratification of the 17th Amendment, you know, you wouldn't get the War Powers Act or the UN passed or all these disastrous pieces of legislation, because the U.S. senators used to be creatures of our state legislatures. Now they're creatures of special interest.
Yeah, absolutely. When the governors could appoint the states, the senators to the Senate, that gave the states power. When they became elected, it basically made the governors of the states impotent and brought about the new federalism. All right, we have to let you go here. Thank you very much for the call, George. We'll be back Monday, 5 p.m. here on the Genesis Communication Network. Have a good weekend. Stay safe. Be well. Be skeptical. Be angry. Anger is good. Anger will get you where you need to go. And aloha, America. Yeah.